Artificial intelligence in bite-sized chunks. AI has always stirred the emotions and caused great excitement as well as great concern. AI can help teach us how to better write better or perhaps generate amazing artworks. But in the wrong hands, AI can create fake images and fake information. It is the subject of a new book called Artificial Intelligence in Bite-Sized Chunks. It's by Peter Bentley. Delighted to say that Peter joins us live on the line now. Good morning to you, Peter.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure's all mine. Should we be worried? Should we be concerned? Should we be checking everything that we see, read, and hear with extra scrutiny?
Well, I guess you probably should. I mean, especially with elections coming up all over the world right now, there's quite a lot of interference, and it's very easy to interfere with audio and visuals and video even, you know, with AI today. So it's actually quite difficult to tell what's real and what isn't.
So when a Luddite like myself hears AI, the default setting is about 1982, 83, James Cameron and Terminator and Skynet and all that sort of thing coming in. It's, you know, we're all going to be taken over by robots. Or even more cheeringly, it's Al from, obviously, the Kubrick films. So what's the actual... Where are we in terms of AI? And B, how did we get here? I mean, where does AI originally sort of come? Where's the genesis, if you like, of that?
Well, let me start with B first. So actually, AI is as old as computers. So the pioneers that first created our computers in the late 40s and 50s, 1950s, they were also pioneers of artificial intelligence. So they always thought, as they created these kind of digital brains, as they thought of them, that this would somehow be similar to our own brains. And that a lot of people got very excited. By the 60s and 70s, they really thought, we've got something here, you know. A lot of the finest minds of their generation were saying, well, by the end of the century, it'll be done. You know, AI will be solved. But of course, it turned out not to be the case. It turned out to be a little bit more difficult. And it's only been in the last decade that we've had such enormous computers and memory and also data. You know, the whole of the internet is almost human knowledge now. And we've got these new kinds of AI models, which are basically simulations. It's very simple simulations, but simulations of the way the brain works. So now these AIs are actually modeling neurons, and millions of neurons all connected together. And they're shown most of human knowledge across the internet. Of course, a lot of it's copyrighted, which is another issue. And they're basically kind of asked, well, if I say this to you, like write me an essay on Henry VIII, what would come next? And guess what? It spits out an essay on Henry VIII. Or show me a picture of Henry VIII and it'll spit out a picture. But it applies to everything, not just essays on Henry VIII. It'll do it for almost anything you ask it for. It'll do it for computer code. It'll do it for videos now. It'll do it for images. Any style you want, it can do it because it's kind of seen it. So pretty powerful stuff.
Should we be worried? I suppose the thing is, should we be worried? Because one of the main things is that artificial intelligence, like any computer, is constantly updating itself, isn't it? It's constantly improving. And it now is automatically, rather than me pushing a button and asking for an update, it is now automatically expanding its knowledge and presumably thinking for itself?
Well, not quite. Right. So... For AI to get better, we still have to tell it to get better.
Right.
So for it to get more knowledge, we have to tell it what to look at. And for it to do anything clever, well, you know, these days, the current AIs, we have to do what's called prompt engineering. So it's not just we tell it what to do. It's actually very difficult to figure out how to tell it what to do. So it's almost a new way of programming computers. Instead of complicated code, we're kind of using English instructions. But these English instructions might be hundreds of pages long. So it's not simple to figure out how to tell it to do things. But yeah, nevertheless, it's still remarkably powerful. I mean, these AI algorithms can write computer code. They do know how to fine-tune other AI models like themselves. So they are being used to improve themselves, but with a lot of guidance from us. So they're not exactly thinking for themselves. They're thinking for us. And they're very much... I guess let's put it this way. It's another tool. And let's say 10 or 15 years ago, we were all worrying about big data. We were all thinking, well, look, all our companies, all our photos, everything is generating so much data, we're overwhelmed with data. We don't know what to do with it. Well, today's AIs are basically the cure for big data. The AIs today, you could ask it, so find me my photo where I can't remember where I was, but I took a picture of this fluffy dog. It'll find it for you. And, you know, increasingly it'll be built into our phones, it'll be built into our computers. So it'll allow us to find things in our data, understand our data, summarize things in our data, and very good at teaching us how to do things too. It's an amazingly good teacher for programmers. If you need to learn how to program something, it's seen just about every program everyone's ever written. So it's still using human knowledge. It's not exactly inventing brand new ways of doing stuff. It's kind of regurgitating all the stuff it's seen before in new combinations. But it's great for teaching us things. So there's some real benefits.
I suppose the thing is, we automatically think of the flashy things. So, like you said, you know, it's the artwork, it's the deep fakes, it's the audio, and those are the ones that make all the headlines. But in terms of actually crunching data and huge amounts of data, it is invaluable.
Oh yeah, I mean, already in scientific domains, it's really showing its worth. You know, in medicine, we've got hundreds of thousands of research papers on certain topics like cancer. And no human being can actually read through all of those things and try and figure out which bits are similar and which bits are not similar. So we get an overview of maybe this kind of drug is working better than that kind of drug. But AI can do that. So AI can actually summarize and bring together all the similarities or differences between research findings. And it can kind of derive new ideas from some of them. So from a scientific perspective, really useful. So, again, I think DeepMind was using it for drug discovery. So, you know, they've pretty much gone through every protein in the human genome now, and we have a very good understanding of the way our body works because of AI.
First, the main thing is, and this will date me because, you know, I come from a household where we had the Encyclopedia Britannica. You see, you're laughing, but yeah, probably the same sort of thing. You know, there was a big, on the bookshelf, there were, I don't know, 24, 48, whatever, but you went to there and off you went on a school project in the 70s and you spent, you know, many happy hours. And then if you're somebody like me, you then got distracted. So you went from trying to find out about Ghanaian coffee beans and you ended up in Carthage, but that's beside the point. But AI, I suppose the problem is now that the worry is that everybody just becomes, and we always talk down the generation that follows, but, oh, they're getting too lazy. They'll just press a button and the article will flow out. They won't have to do any research because you'll have A-level students, university graduates will just push a button and the next thing you know, 20 pages of projects will come out because AI will have written it.
I mean, to be honest, yeah, they could do that. It's you can kind of tell that an AI has done it and not the student because the AI has a really good vocabulary and it's often rather more eloquent than your average student. But having said that, you know, you can even fine tune it if you're clever. You can fine tune an AI on the stuff you've written before and tell it to write in your style. So it's a tough job to be a teacher these days because, yeah, you actually could get an AI to do all your homework. But so that's one of the more difficult things, and it's things that teachers and lecturers and universities have to be aware of. It may change the way education operates a little bit.
Having said that, though, I mean, if you ask, if somebody's spat out a, you know, an essay on the, you know, on the Holy Roman Empire, and then you ask them in person about it, about the Byzantines, and exactly, there you go. So you know, that'll be a catch-up. Talk me through then bite-sized chunks, and by the way, nice use of the Y, good vowel to use there. So, what's inspired you to write this, and what are you trying to do with it, Peter?
Well, I think it's time. I mean, obviously, it's not the only book on AI, but very few books at the moment are really looking back and sort of explaining this is not the first time. You know, we have crazy excitement at the moment around the world on AI, and perhaps more money than we've ever seen before being pushed into AI research. But back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, there were times when we also had crazy amounts of money and crazy amounts of excitement. So it's actually gone in cycles. And if you go back and you look at how things have changed over the years, yeah, some of the pioneers of their day were making completely the same predictions that we're hearing today. So it's partly to let the reader know this is how it works, this is where it came from, and partly to ground the discussion a little bit. Yeah, AI is amazing today. Is it going to reach human intelligence? Is it going to replace us? I don't think so. You know, and actually there'd be some scientists who might even disagree with that statement today, but intelligence and human intelligence is built on more than language. And that's what the current AIs that are so successful are actually built on. They're built on language. And, you know, the way we move, the way we think is actually more than just what we say. I mean, you're a talk show host. You might play a lot of importance on what we say. But nevertheless, you know, I think there was a nice quote recently from someone. I forget who it was. They said, well, I always wanted an AI to help me with the chores around the house and do the dishes so that I could spend more time, you know, doing my artwork and doing my writing. And instead what's happened is AI's doing all the artwork and writing and I'm having to spend all my time doing the dishes and the chores. You know, it's the wrong way around.
Yeah, I've seen that one as well. But that's just the thing. I mean, a lot of friends who are creative, musicians, artists are saying, oh, for goodness sake, this is going to, I mean, you only have to go on the social media and say, what did you look like a Viking? And, you know, AI will put you on. I look nothing like a Viking. You'd be happy to know, but AI will spit one out of those. And, you know, so there is the creative industries are getting a little worried about this.
Yes. But again, you know, what these AIs are doing is using what's already out there. Mm. So that's not at all nice if you're an artist and an AI is spitting out stuff that's basically copies of your work. But AI is not original here. You know, it's not coming up with groundbreaking new concepts. It's actually regurgitating everything it's seen. And increasingly, as more and more regulation is being put into place, it will become more difficult for them to regurgitate things that are basically variations of famous artists' work or even not famous artists' work. You know, if it's copyrighted, The AI should not be able to be trained on it without permission, and it should not be spitting out things that are similar.
You touch on ethics in the book, and I suppose one of the things as well is the fact that with, for example, social media, everybody got very carried away with it when it first launched, 20 years ago now. And it's only now that they're trying to rein them in and say, these are certain things that shouldn't be appearing. My child can access this. And it seems that once again, the technology advances and then the ethics and the legal profession come scurrying about a decade behind. Do you think we are in the same situation with AI, so that we get very carried away with it and we say, you know, as in the immortal words of, and every maverick scientist loves this one because it's Jeff Goldblum, just because you could didn't mean, I'm paraphrasing here as well, didn't mean that you should have.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. So, you know, the field of AI is my field. I've been in it for 25, 30 years. I know it very well, and I know the scientists in it very well. And the scientists, unfortunately, are driven more by curiosity. Can we make something that does this than a practical utility? Do we need anything that does this? And B, is it going to be dangerous? So we typically end up again and again and again in this situation where we have amazing technologies that do astonishing things. And we find ourselves saying, well, yeah, we've got these extraordinary chatbots now that can talk to us. What do we do with them? And then, oh, well, okay, some people know what to do with them. They can completely use them for really awful, awful things. You know, these image generators can make horrible porn. The chat box can distort elections and completely manipulate the way people think. So, yeah, there's a lot of bad sides. And the sad thing is, yes, there's regulation coming out right now in Europe and in other countries, but AI is out there. AI is in the wild. There's a site called Hugging Face where it hosts AI models. There are tens of thousands of AI models. You can just download. You can just use them. So, if you're the kind of person or company that wants to do horrible, nefarious things, are you really going to pay attention to an EU regulation? Really not. You're just going to do it.
But on the flip side, without AI, we won't be able to discover cures for things because, as you said, a lot of it's going to have to be physical, but an awful lot of it's going to be crunching all that data, which would take years in terms of university researchers, etc. And if we are to go, you know, beyond the final frontier and all that, AI is going to be doing all the computing in the net for anything we do space related over the next couple of hundred years, because as we go further distances and try and colonize other planets, as it were.
Well, I don't know that we need AI to help us navigate, let's say, but AI certainly helps us understand the universe, and AI certainly helps us understand ourselves and our own works, because, as I said earlier, we have so much that we produce. AI is an amazing way of helping us understand ourselves and the things that we do, and helping us maximize our own science and our own works. I don't think AI is going to replace us, and I don't think AI should replace us. You know, this idea of autonomous vehicles and driverless cars, actually there's a lot of us that like driving. Why do we need to replace people who actually are rather better at driving than autonomous cars? Frankly, I wouldn't have an autonomous vehicle myself.
Of course, yeah, but you don't know this, but the listeners, well, I have appalling luck with cars, so anything that actually worked would be good for me. So there you go. Can I just ask you about the front cover? Because yeah. I'm looking at this and I'm thinking this is Philip K. Dick, the Android's Dream of Electric Sheep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. This is an AI's interpretation of that title.
Right.
And if you look closely, you can see that as really interesting as it is, you can see the imperfections too. It appears to have five legs, this electric sheep.
This is true.
And it appears to have two mouths as well.
So it does, yes, indeed. So there you go. So it's not identifiable, but yes, I do like my arcane hidden science fiction thing, because we science fiction nerds must stay together. What do you hope that people will take from artificial intelligence in bite-sized chunks?
Well, I hope they get an understanding of where we've come from, of a little bit of how things work, because I do try and explain things, an understanding of some of the people that helped create this. This is a book where I've tried to actually focus on the AIs as well. So the AIs are almost as much the characters as the people who created them. And I really dig into how each AI, even back in time to the 50s, how they came about and how they work, right up to present day. I hope people can understand this is very exciting. This is very powerful technology. It shouldn't replace us. We do need to be worried about it, but at the same time, we need to be excited about it. So it's a double-edged sword.
The book is called Artificial Intelligence in Bite-Sized Chunks. It's by Dr. Peter J. Bentley, who was speaking to you today. Peter, if people want to find you online, apart from asking their chatbot to find you, where what's the easiest way of finding more out about you and your work?
You can go to my website. That's peterjbentley.com.
The book is called Artificial Intelligence in Bite-Sized Chunks. You'll be also able to order it from our own virtual bookstore. Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Okay, my pleasure.